This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
History has taught us very clearly that when we stop making progress, it's not that we just stand still, but we go backwards.
That's Pedro Alonso, director of the WHO Global Malaria Program in Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, the plan to deport thousands of African migrants from Israel is being abandoned, and efforts are underway by religious leaders in Cameroon to curb fresh recruitment efforts by Boko Haram.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Israel has abandoned a plan to deport thousands of African migrants. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
About 37,000 African migrants have gotten a reprieve after Israel canceled deportation orders that had left the community in limbo. In February, the government handed out papers to thousands of African males, which amounted to an ultimatum: leave the country in 2 months or go to prison. The plan was abandoned when Rwanda backed out of a deal to take the migrants in, saying it could not guarantee their safety.
In a radio interview, Public Security Minister Gilad Erdan admitted that the government has no solution for the problem of the infiltrators, as they are called here.
He blamed Israel's Supreme Court and human rights groups, which warned that forcibly deporting the migrants back to Africa would endanger their lives. Most of the Africans came from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan and entered Israel illegally over the past decade. Techlit Mikhael, who came from Eritrea, breathed a sigh of relief.
I'm very happy to see the deportation policy is cancelled. And now it is the right time for the Israeli government to give a solution for the asylum seeker who came from Africa, a refugee status, or to answer their asylum claim application.
But the Israeli government rejects the Africans' claim they are refugees, with this legislator describing it as a lie.
זה השקר, זה הקמפיין הכי שקרי שיש היום בתקשורת. פליטים, מדינת ישראל קולטת, ואני אלחם שנקרא פליטים.
Yoav Kish of the ruling right-wing Likud party said they are economic migrants seeking to escape poverty in Africa, and therefore Israel is not obligated to take them in. Officials blame the Africans for rising crime in southern Tel Aviv and accuse them of damaging the Jewish character of the state. So the government is looking for new ways to pressure them to leave voluntarily. But many Israelis are sympathetic toward the migrants. They say Israel has a moral responsibility to offer them asylum because the country was built by Jewish refugees fleeing the Holocaust. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Religious leaders in Cameroon have been visiting towns along the country's border with Nigeria this week in a bid to curb fresh recruitment efforts by Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Mora.
Prayers are said at the mosque in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Imam Abu Hamatuku is from the nearby town of Garua. He is taking part in an outreach program by both Muslim and Christian preachers. The imam says Boko Haram is trying to lure youth with promises that they will go to heaven if they die fighting so-called unbelievers.
La tâche est très lourde. Comme vous le savez, il faut renforcer la pratique de l'islam.
He says it is a heavy task ahead of the country's religious leaders to reinforce the practice of true Islam, which he says is the only way through which true Muslims will go to paradise, as stated by the Holy Quran. He says another challenge is promoting peaceful coexistence between Muslims and members of other faiths. Local officials and the military say Boko Haram is trying to rebuild its ranks by recruiting in the border area. The terror group has been weakened by the multinational joint task force operating in the Lake Chad Basin. The group of imams and priests is urging the population, especially the youth, to reject overtures from Boko Haram and to report strangers and suspicious people to the military. For 26-year-old Hassan Nurma, the outreach has personal significance. He says his brother joined Boko Haram and was killed last November in a raid by the multinational joint task force.
Nous avons eu l'occasion de recevoir des grands savants qui sont venus du Nigeria.
He says the preachers are teaching them how to live together in a community with understanding and tolerance despite the challenges they face. However, he and other youth said religious education alone is not enough to stop recruitment. The conflict has destroyed the local economy, making employment even harder to find. Former fighter Amadou Buba says he has struggled to survive since he escaped Boko Haram during a military raid in December.
Il a demandé à l'État pour nous aider à faire l'école, l'argent de scolarité.
He says he is asking the government to help them by rebuilding their schools, markets and hospitals and providing them with food and jobs because they returned from the Sambisa forest with nothing. He said Boko Haram told him they would teach him to be a preacher, but instead had begun training him to fight, so he fled. In 2016, Cameroon launched a program to help families displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency, giving each one a pair of goats and attempting to create gardening jobs for youths on its northern border with Nigeria. But the challenge is vast. The conflict has displaced tens of thousands of people in the far north region. Military gains over the past 2 years have allowed cross-border commerce to slowly resume. However, many farmers and cattle ranchers say they cannot yet return to their villages due to food shortages. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Cameroon.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan says it is investigating allegations that one of its peacekeepers sexually abused one of four girls who were caught trying to enter the UNMISS compound at Awail. UNMISS spokesperson Francesca Mold told VOA that one of the teens alleged that a peacekeeper from Nepal touched her inappropriately in exchange for money. She says if found guilty, the peacekeeper will be held accountable for his actions. She cited UN policy for zero tolerance, no excuses, and no second chances on sexual exploitation and abuse. Mold says her office dispatched a team to Awail to investigate and reported the incident to the Independent Office of Internal Oversight Services and the Nepalese government. Awail State Information Minister Dang Dang says police also are investigating.
The World Health Organization is joining a worldwide call to stop a resurgence of malaria that threatens much of the progress made over the past decade. To mark World Malaria Day, the WHO is pushing for urgent action and money to get the global fight against this ancient scourge back on track. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
For many years, World Malaria Day has been a cause for celebration, but not this year. World Health Organization data show that starting in 2016, progress has been at a standstill and hopes of ending the global epidemic by 2030 are slipping away. Director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says some of the gains made in reducing the number of cases and deaths in countries across all regions of the world are being reversed.
As a consequence, we now have about 216 million cases of malaria every year in excess of 440,000 deaths every year. History has taught us very clearly that when we stop making progress, it's not that we just stand still, but we go backwards, and then malaria comes back, and comes back with a vengeance.
About 90% of all malaria cases and deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Children under the age of 5, pregnant women, and patients with HIV/AIDS are most at risk. Alonso says global political commitment must be renewed, and donors in affected countries must increase the financial resources needed to successfully tackle malaria.
And we need new and improved tools to prevent, diagnose, and treat malaria. Our sense is that with the resources available today and with the tools we have today, we have seen the limit of what can be achieved.
The issue of malaria's resurgence came up on the sidelines of a Commonwealth summit in London this month, where Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, who has invested billions of dollars in fighting malaria, pledged yet another $1 billion to the effort. WHO estimates $5.5 billion are needed each year to wage a successful global fight against malaria. However, only about half that amount has been pledged. Vector control is the main way to prevent and reduce the spread of malaria. Alonso says better insecticides, better insecticide-treated mosquito nets, as well as better drugs are essential in combating the disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Southern African Development Community has extended its peacekeeping operation in Lesotho and has named new envoys to the Democratic Republic of Congo and to Madagascar. Wrapping up the SADC meeting in Luanda yesterday, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said he is confident the group's actions will strengthen security in the region. Ramaphosa is the group's chairman. A DRC official told VOA's James Butte that it is pleased with the outcome of the summit. Information Minister Lambert Mende says President Joseph Kabila attended the meeting and the leaders praised him for facilitating a smooth process for the December 23rd election. Mende also said Kabila has promised to respect the constitutional provision that says no one can run for office 3 consecutive times. SADC leaders named former Namibian President Hifikepunye Pohamba their special envoy to the DRC. Joaquim Chissano, the former president of Mozambique, will be the SADC envoy to Madagascar to help in resolving political tensions there. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 18 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Israel has abandoned a plan to deport thousands of African migrants. Efforts is underway by religious leaders in Cameroon to curb fresh recruitment efforts by Boko Haram. And the World Health Organization is joining a worldwide call to stop a resurgence of malaria. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The much-feared day zero, the day the South African city of Cape Town was supposed to shut off the taps as drought exhausted the water supply, has been quietly pushed from this month to this August and then to 2019. While some Cape Townians are angry about this, the tight water usage restrictions remain in place until there is a marked improvement in dam levels. City officials are touting the experience as a valuable lesson in water management. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Cape Town officials' recent decision to quietly downgrade the scary-sounding Day Zero to Day Maybe Never has met with mixed emotions. While experts predict the city will get much-needed rain in coming months, the restrictions limiting each resident to 50 liters a day remain in place. Water conservation expert Claire Pengelly works for Green Cape, a nonprofit organization that has been advising local industry during the city's long drought. She says that while some residents have welcomed the downgrading of Day Zero, others are more skeptical.
You certainly get the perspective from certain individuals that we've had an impact, we've been able to save, and it means that we will get through the summer, and therefore day zero has been postponed. But obviously you've also got the other perspectives that are saying day zero was effectively some kind of a hoax. It was really just a marketing ploy to change behavior. It was never, ever going to happen.
Deputy Mayor Ian Nielsen defended the city's decision to sound the alarm in late January, when three successive years of drought had left the city's three main dams dangerously low.
When we go back to December, January of this year, then the situation then was very, very different. The consumption of the city was still too high at that stage, even though it had been very significantly reduced. And it was only essentially towards the end of January to the beginning of February when the city put in the much tougher restrictions that we were able to turn this around.
Nielsen has previously criticized Cape Town's politically embattled mayor for her handling of the crisis. He was handed her water portfolio earlier this year and says the city waited too long to act.
We knew already that that was all that we had, but action was delayed on that while the mayor was still managing the situation. We should have at that point brought in these tougher restrictions beginning of November, but that was delayed, and in the end, the city implemented that beginning of February.
Pengelly, who says she now takes one-minute showers, says the threat of day zero made a huge impact. She notes that overall water consumption hasn't risen in Cape Town.
I do dream of a day when the drought is over and I can have a long, hot bath, which I haven't had a bath in well over a year. But I know that I think a lot of the kind of inherent savings and feeling around the scarcity and the value of water, I think will always stay with me.
Even if day zero never comes, she says, she and many Cape Townians will never be the same. Anita Paul, VOA News, Johannesburg.
French police have detained billionaire Vincent Bolloré for a second day of questioning over his company's operations in Africa. The Bolloré Group has businesses in 46 African nations, from port operations to railroads to trade. For the past 2 years, the French financial crimes team has been investigating allegations he improperly obtained contracts to run ports in Togo and Guinea. Journalist Catherine Field in Paris is following the story. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson about the investigation.
Specifically, the focus is the allegation that contracts were awarded to Monsieur Bolloré's company for container terminals in Togo and in Guinea in return for, if you like, discounted prices for help in the presidential campaigns in that country. It is specifically the financial crimes unit that is looking into this, and it is particularly the tenders and the communications during those two presidential election campaigns.
Now, what is the company's response so far?
So far, the company has said that it will cooperate with the judiciary on these questions, that they're fully prepared to cooperate wherever necessary. However, they do say that the company formally denies any irregularities, that they say that they're well aware that this investigation was underway. Already in 2016, the Financial Crimes Unit of the French police searched the company headquarters in relation to these allegations. So the fact that it's been chugging along was no surprise at all to the company.
What is the extent of the company's Africa operations?
I think when you look at this particular company, it's probably right to call it a sprawling logistics empire. It has a presence in 46 African countries. It's got 25,000 employees. It has logistics that cover both waterways, container ports. It also has roads that it owns, essentially, in these countries. So it really has a huge presence in Africa. It is also involved in import, export, also involved in hotels.
What comes next in the investigation?
At the moment, Monsieur Bonnaré is still being held by French police, and that can be extended for another 24 hours. And during this time, he is being questioned on all of the company's dealings in this particular investigation. After that, well, a lot can happen, and a lot of it will happen very slowly because the French Financial Crimes Unit does tend to take its time. So we could see something like they then spend 6 months going over these this interview, going back, marrying it up with other information they have, and they may just order, if you like, a simple summons to him to appear again. They can, of course, take the measures that they formally charge him, but that is unusual. Usually these things take a lot more time than that. They can say that he's either just a witness in these crimes, or they can say that he is actually a real suspect. Either way, these things will take months, if not years, to chug out. But the fact is that the Financial Crimes Unit in Paris has taken this on board and is investigating this, shows that they are no longer just turning a blind eye to allegations of money laundering, financial crimes, and lack of compliance by French companies operating in Africa.
That was journalist Catherine Field in Paris speaking with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, join us for a special broadcast on autism, hosted by VOA health correspondent Lenore Madu. She will host a panel of experts to demystify the developmental disorder.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.